The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up. It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News.
And good evening. Wall Street today signaled its approval of the tax cuts passed by the Republican-controlled Congress.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Hurricane Lane scrapes past Hawaii.
President Trump has issued an emergency disaster declaration.
Senator John McCain ending medical treatment for cancer.
There's going to be a real void to fill.
Lawmakers respond to a damaging week for President Trump.
Well, it'd be nice if we knew the truth here. There's no question about that.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Let's start this weekend with Hurricane Lane as it lurches past Hawaii, dumping feet of rain on islands there. Federal authorities also preparing to respond. More from correspondent Maria Villarreal in Hilo.
President Trump has issued an emergency disaster declaration that is to free up federal funding for the Hawaiian Islands. Right now, we know already there are 300 federal emergency workers ready to go at a moment's notice.
Back on the mainland, Arizona Senator John McCain's family announced Friday he's discontinuing medical treatment for a rare form of brain cancer that he's been battling for more than a year. Here's CBS News political correspondent Ed O'Keefe.
There's going to be a real void to fill among senators who are far younger, far less experienced, and far less accustomed to working with members of the other party to get things done in Congress.
Washington continues to react to the conviction of former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort.
Paul Manafort showed no emotion in court as a jury handed special counsel Robert Mueller his first conviction in the ongoing investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 campaign. The jury found Manafort guilty on 8 of 18 charges. Manafort was indicted by special counsel Robert Mueller in February of 2018. After deliberating for 4 days, the jury found Manafort guilty of 5 counts of filing false tax returns, guilty on 1 count of not filing financial accounts, and guilty on 2 counts of misleading lenders for loans he applied for. The jury, however, could not come to a unanimous verdict on 10 charges.
Should you put on a defense for your client?
Manafort's attorneys did not present any witnesses or evidence in defense of their client, saying the government had not proved its case. Manafort served as President Trump's campaign manager for several months. Sources close to Manafort say he chose not to cooperate with special counsel because he is banking on a presidential pardon to keep him out of jail. President Trump weighed in after the verdict.
I feel very sad about that. It doesn't involve me, but I still feel, it's a very sad thing that happens. This has nothing to do with Russian collusion. This started as Russian collusion. This has absolutely nothing to do. This is a witch hunt, and it's a disgrace.
Special counsel will return at the end of the month to say whether or not they will retry Manafort on those 10 counts where the jury couldn't reach a consensus. Manafort faces a second trial related to his foreign lobbying work next month in Washington, D.C. Paula Reed, CBS News, Alexandria, Virginia.
Former Trump fixer and personal attorney Michael Cohen will be sentenced December 12th. He pleaded guilty to campaign finance violations and other charges in a Manhattan federal court, also Tuesday.
Michael Cohen left the U.S. District Court in Manhattan after admitting to tax evasion and campaign finance violations.
Michael, what's your message to the president?
Cohen's voice cracked in court as he answered the judge's questions and admitted that Mr. Trump directed him to make hush money payments to adult film star Stormy Daniels and Playboy model Karen McDougal. Cohen said the payments were made in coordination and at the direction of the same candidate, and that it was done to keep the women from disclosing information for the principal purpose of influencing the election. After first denying he knew about Cohen's payment to Daniels, a month later the president acknowledged he repaid Cohen through a monthly retainer to stop the false and extortionist accusations made by her about an affair.
These are very serious charges and reflect a pattern of lies and dishonesty.
Deputy U.S. Attorney Robert Kazami said Cohen decided he was above the law.
And for that, he was going to pay a very, very serious price.
For more than a decade, Cohen was Mr. Trump's so-called fixer. But in recent months, after investigators raided his office, home, and hotel room, he became alienated from President Trump and increasingly signaled a willingness to turn on him. Just last month, he and his attorney released recordings Cohen had made of President Trump 2 months before the election, allegedly discussing the payment to McDougal.
Correspondent Jeff Pegase reporting. The Manhattan DA also confirming Friday it's investigating the Trump Organization as federal prosecutors grant immunity to longtime friend to Mr. Trump, National Enquirer publisher David Pecker. Democrats on Capitol Hill say the moment marks a turning point for the Trump administration. Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal.
We're in a constitutional maelstrom. It's a Watergate moment. Now is the time to consider all of the remedies.
Among those remedies, talk of a presidential indictment, impeachment, or delaying the confirmation hearing for Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, who some Democrats say is tainted by the president. Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah, you are on the Judiciary Committee. We're talking about Brett Kavanaugh, whose nomination to the Supreme Court begins his hearings September the 4th. Tell me about what your reaction is to Democrats at least calling for a delay in these hearings.
Well, they're always calling for a delay. They don't want Kavanaugh at all. They're still bitter that they lost the election and that Hillary is not appointing whoever she wanted to appoint to the United States Supreme Court. I understand that, but that still doesn't negate the fact that we need to move forward. We need to get the court up to speed. And how do you find anybody any better than Kavanaugh? He's known everywhere as a straight shooter and a decent guy and somebody who sets a good example.
Do you think, though, this cloud of Michael Cohen, Paul Manafort, taints his nomination at all?
Heavens no, that has nothing to do with this nomination.
But Democrats say Kavanaugh was nominated by a man who is an unindicted co-conspirator with Michael Cohen, and Kavanaugh might get a case involving the president.
I think the Democrats are full of baloney. I mean, there's no use kidding about it. Everybody knows that Kavanaugh was in line for this position if Trump won the presidency. And he's now nominated. He's totally capable. He's got an excellent reputation for 12 years on the second highest court in the land, the Circuit Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. And by any measure, he would make a tremendous United States Supreme Court justice.
Do you think the president ever lied to the American people about these payments made to Stormy and Kara McDougal?
Well, I can't say because I wasn't there. I don't know.
Do you think you should know?
Well,
do you think senators should know?
Well, it'd be nice if we knew the truth here. There's no question about that, but I'm not sure you ever really fully know the truth in some of these matters. All I can say is that that's a completely different issue. It has nothing to do with the Supreme Court.
Senator Orrin Hatch, thank you.
Nice to see you.
On Friday morning, President Trump again attacked his Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. It follows a rare statement in which Sessions pushed back against President Trump Thursday.
In a Fox News interview, the president again aired his frustrations.
I put an Attorney General that never took control of the Justice Department, Jeff Sessions.
The president went on to repeat his criticism of Sessions' recusal from the Russia probe.
I said, what kind of a man is this?
Now Sessions is fired back in a statement. Sessions vows as long as he's attorney general, the actions of his department, quote, will not be improperly influenced by political considerations. Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, The White House.
Coming up, the congressman accused of lavishly spending campaign money on himself. That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. California Congressman Duncan Hunter, along with his wife, have been indicted for allegedly misusing campaign funds.
Republican Duncan Hunter was surrounded by protesters as he entered a San Diego courthouse. His wife arrived separately. Inside, they both pleaded not guilty to 60 counts ranging from wire fraud to falsifying records. They're accused of using campaign funds constantly over 7 years to pay for groceries, utilities, school tuition, video games, a Hawaiian vacation, even airfare for the family's pet rabbit. Hunter's attorney tried to frame the case as an election year hit job.
This investigation, we believe, was politically motivated.
But the indictment lays out dozens of examples of Hunter and his wife allegedly disguising their spending to make it seem campaign-related. A $700 payment to the local dentist was recorded as a charitable contribution to Smiles for Life. A $200 weekly golf outing, Hunter claimed, was a Christian thing with a supporter. The former Marine tried to justify using campaign funds for a $14,000 Italian vacation by scheduling a visit to a Navy base there. When Navy officials couldn't accommodate his chosen date, Hunter allegedly told his chief of staff, "Tell the Navy to go F themselves."
No, completely false.
Republicans worry the case creates an opening for Hunter's Democratic challenger.
Washington chewed him up and spat him out and engulfed him in the corruption.
Hunter was just the second member of Congress to endorse President Trump during the campaign. The first was Chris Collins of New York, who was indicted on insider trading charges earlier this month. The president has had a lot to say lately about accused criminals in his orbit, but not a word so far about either Collins or Hunter. Nancy Cordes, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
President Trump tweeted Friday that he's told Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to cancel a high-level visit to North Korea, saying the country hasn't shown enough progress in denuclearizing. For the first time in the country's longest war, a U.S. airman has been posthumously awarded the nation's highest honor for his bravery in Afghanistan.
Technical Sergeant John Chapman was mortally wounded after his helicopter crash-landed in enemy-infested Takur Gar Mountain in March of 2002. The president says that Chapman fought bravely on.
In this final act of supreme courage, John gave his life for his fellow warriors,
saving many of them in the process.
Through his extraordinary sacrifice, John helped save more than 20 American service members.
Chapman's widow, Valerie, accepted the honor posthumously on behalf of her husband. Bill Rakoff, CBS News, Washington.
ISIS has released a new audio recording it claims comes from its leader. CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick has more from the Pentagon.
In the audio, a voice purported to be Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi urges followers to persevere and continue fighting. If it is Baghdadi, it's his first recording in a year. He talks about recent events like Turkey's diplomatic dispute with the U.S. and Russia's attempts to compete with the U.S. for influence in the Middle East. But for many months, rumors have swirled around whether he's dead or alive. If alive, he's thought to be hiding somewhere in the desert near the Syrian-Iraqi border.
U.S. officials believe Al-Qaeda's top bomb maker has been killed. Officials are confident Ibrahim al-Asiri was killed last year in an American drone strike in Yemen. David Martin talked with CBS News senior national security contributor, former acting CIA director Mike Morrell.
Ibrahim al-Asiri was known as a master bomb maker. And after Osama bin Laden was killed, he might well have been the single most dangerous terrorist in the world.
This is the most significant removal of a terrorist from the battlefield since bin Laden. He was that important.
In 2009, Asiri designed the underwear bomb, which nearly took down a U.S. airliner over Detroit on Christmas Day. No one was killed because the suspect wearing the bomb failed to properly detonate the device. A year later, the Saudi-born Asiri nearly pulled off another attack by hiding explosives in printer cartridges being shipped on cargo planes to the United States. The devices got through airport security in the United Kingdom and were only discovered because of a last-minute tip.
Probably the most sophisticated terrorist bomb maker on the planet, surgically implanting explosives inside of human bodies.
More recently, Asiri was believed to be working on a bomb that could be hidden in laptops and mobile devices, prompting the TSA to ban such items on some flights to the U.S.
Police say an undocumented immigrant killed a University of Iowa student on a jog last month, leading officers to her body.
Wearing handcuffs and headphones for Spanish translation, 24-year-old Christian Bahana Rivera made his first appearance before a judge and the public since his arrest for allegedly killing Molly Tibbetts.
Mr. Rivera, you have been charged with murder in the first degree.
Rivera's from Mexico, and federal officials tell CBS News he's undocumented.
A person came in from Mexico illegally and killed her.
President Trump was part of a growing chorus of Republicans to cite Tibbetts' case as a reason for stronger immigration laws. Rivera's lawyer, Alan Richards, who in court papers claims Rivera's here legally, said those comments could hinder his client's right to a fair trial.
The government has weighed in at the highest levels of a predisposition that this young man, Christian, is guilty.
The owners of Yarrabee Farms, the dairy farm where Rivera worked for 4 years, say he was a good employee.
This is shocking.
Dane Lang, who's part of a well-known Republican political family here, claims Rivera gave them government IDs with a different name. He also says they used the wrong government screening system to verify his employment eligibility.
Given the political debate, on Facebook, Molly Tippett's aunt wrote, "Please remember, evil comes in every color." Adriana Diaz, CBS News, Montezuma, Iowa.
Among those joining President Trump calling for tougher measures to keep out illegal immigrants following the attack is Iowa Republican Senator Chuck Grassley, who I talk with. Democrats often come under fire when, after mass shootings, they call for gun control. You're calling for stricter border controls following the arrest of the accused murderer. Do you think that's politicizing it at all?
No, not at all. In fact, I think that we have a job as United States senators to make sure that Homeland Security does its job. And so maybe for the last 10 years, similar situations where undocumented immigrants were involved in some criminal activity. Like within the last 3 or 4 years, the same thing happened in Maryland. The same thing happened in Virginia. I have a responsibility as a member of the Senate, and more importantly now, as chairman of the Judiciary Committee, to find out, is our executive branch, under Republican or Democrat, doing their constitutional responsibility of enforcing, faithfully executing the laws. And I think when you have somebody cross the border without papers, they violated our laws, why isn't Homeland Security enforcing that law? That's why I'm asking those questions. And I've done it for not just because this murdered victim was from Iowa, but because that's my job, and I do it wherever the murder happened.
Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley. Up next, calls for reform in the Catholic Church as the Pope arrives in Ireland. That's next on the Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Sunday nights, Monday mornings, or Tuesday afternoons. You can listen to 60 Minutes whenever you want with the weekly podcast from CBS News.
How do we know you're telling the truth?
Because I have no reason to lie.
With hard-hitting investigative reports, interviews, and profiles.
Did these documents that you got prove corruption?
Absolutely.
From a variety of CBS News correspondents and contributors.
I'm Steve Croft.
I'm Leslie Stahl.
I'm Anderson Cooper.
For the biggest scoops and the best storytelling, subscribe to the 60 Minutes podcast today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. North Korea has again allowed families separated by the Korean War to briefly reunite.
This mother got to hug her son for the first time in 68 years. She is 92, he is now 71, but she still called him her boy. They were one of 89 families reunited for the first time since the Korean War separated them nearly seven decades ago. The peninsula was divided in two.
Pathetic bands of refugees streamed southwards along the icy road.
Families trapped on either side of the border never saw or heard from each other again. Lee Soo-nam just returned from the reunion, where he saw his older brother for the first time since 1950.
How are you feeling after this experience?
I lived life without knowing whether my brother was alive or dead, he said. And so for me to have met him feels like a dream. But there is also sorrow in saying goodbye. South Korean President Moon Jae-in and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un have agreed to bring more families together. But the North has often used these reunions as bargaining chips. 57,000 South Koreans are still hoping to meet their long-lost relatives. But with many now in their 80s and 90s, time is running out. 3,000 die each year without seeing their loved ones again. These fortunate few had to say goodbye Wednesday. Their 12 hours together is all too brief comfort for a lifetime spent apart. Ben Tracy, CBS News, Seoul.
Members of the Catholic Church across the world are calling for action after a Pennsylvania grand jury report said more than 1,000 children were sexually abused by more than 300 priests. This weekend, Pope Francis meeting with some victims of priest abuse at the church's World Meeting of Families in Dublin.
There's a dysfunction in the family, and we have to address it.
This is a really dark time.
Cardinal Blaise Supich and Sister Liz Murphy hope Pope Francis can chart a way forward following last week's Pennsylvania grand jury report, which Supich, the Archbishop of Chicago, calls a catalog of horrors.
One section describes a group of priests who mark their victims with crucifixes.
to identify the ones that were easier targets. Are you worried that something like this could surface where you are?
If such a ring existed, we have the measures by which we could detect it.
Supich says a series of reforms adopted by bishops in 2002 have dramatically reduced abuse cases in the U.S.
Whenever there is a violation, we name it. We come out with it. We tell people what's going on. And we make sure that people are held accountable.
I think there's much more needed than just naming individuals. With respect, mm-hmm. Cardinal.
Sister Liz Murphy leads one of the largest religious organizations in Ireland, a country also reeling from the sex abuse crisis. She believes the Catholic Church's problems are institutional.
It is a very male, masculine, institutional, top-down, dictatorial body.
What do you say to those people who say, let's restructure starting with every bishop?
In reality, it'll create anarchy. Many bishops in the United States are just as outraged as the people are by what we read in the grand jury report in Pennsylvania.
How does the Pope survive this pivotal moment?
This is a virus, and this is not going to be healed over these coming days. To expect the Pope to come up with a strategic plan for the Catholic Church over a weekend in Dublin is quite daft, to be honest.
Jonathan Vigliotti, CBS News, Dublin.
Apologies and punishments for the leaders of the Ohio State University football team.
I followed my heart, not my head. I fell short in pursuing full information because at each juncture, I gave Zach Smith the benefit of the doubt.
At a news conference late Wednesday night, Ohio State football coach Urban Meyer apologized for mismanaging allegations that former assistant coach Zach Smith abused his now ex-wife, Courtney. Investigators determined that Meyer and the athletic director failed to report the claims and seemed to misunderstand their obligation to tell the university about accusations of domestic violence involving players or staff.
I have huge regret.
Urban Meyer fired Zach Smith last month after his ex-wife was granted a domestic violence protective order against him.
I was never told about anything. Never anything came to light.
Meyer originally said he did not know about a 2015 incident where Smith allegedly abused his then-wife. The investigation determined he did, but his, quote, significant misstatements were not part of a deliberate cover-up effort.
I do believe he knew, and instead he chose to help the abuser.
Courtney Smith told the sports news site Stadium that she informed Urban Meyer's wife, Shelley, about the abuse and expected her to tell the coach.
I believe the coach, along with the coach's wife, have a duty. They have a duty to do something to help instead of worrying about winning games.
When given the chance, Meyer did not directly address Courtney Smith.
What message do you have for Courtney Smith?
Well, I have a message for everyone involved in this. I'm sorry that we're in this situation.
Underneath Urban Meyer's watch, this occurred, and you can't sugarcoat that. That happened.
Paul Meyerberg is a writer for USA Today Sports. He says those with authority in college athletics must do more than simply report alleged abuses.
It's your responsibility as someone in a position of leadership to follow through on it. And if that alone is what happened here, that they did not follow through, the suspension is more than warranted.
Through his lawyer, former coach Zach Smith blamed his ex-wife, who accused him of domestic violence accusations he denied. The statement from his lawyer read in part, vengeance against her ex-husband regrettably resulted in collateral damage to Urban Meyer, Gene Smith, and the Ohio State University. Now, this is not the only scandal involving Ohio State athletics. The school is also facing lawsuits over a former university club diving coach accused of forcing athletes into sex and allegations of sexual abuse from 1979 to 1997 by an athletic department doctor. Jim Axelrod, CBS News, New York.
Athletic director Gene Smith, not related to Zach or Courtney Smith, was also suspended from August 31st to September 16th. Officials have scrapped a plan to cut most polling places in a majority black Georgia county amid allegations of discrimination.
Elections officials in Randolph County in South Georgia were scheduled to vote on a plan to close 7 of the 9 polling places in the predominantly black county. They had said the locations don't comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act. State Representative Gerald Green.
What we should all be about is getting more people to vote and not less.
Opponents questioned why a county would make it harder to vote in a hotly contested race for governor in Georgia. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
It's another dazzling life
styles of the rich and famous.
He was a titan of the 80s, sipping champagne with celebrities.
On this high note edition, meet the driving force.
Now Hollywood and TV viewers around the world are remembering Robin Leach, who died Thursday night in Las Vegas at age 76. Coming up on the weekend roundup, scary moments for rapper Post Malone.
Officials say Malone and his entourage were headed to London Luton Airport in England.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio. And I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. The Colorado man police say killed his wife and kids appeared in court Tuesday.
The 33-year-old accused of killing his pregnant wife, Shanann, and their two daughters showed no emotions as Judge Marcelo Capcow read off his 9 felony charges.
And that crime is classified as murder in the first degree, a class 1 felon.
Sitting in the first row, Shanann's father, Frank Ruzek, broke down as his son Frankie tried to console him.
Christopher Lee Watts, the cause of death of Celeste Watts.
In an affidavit, Watts admits he killed his pregnant wife, but says he did not kill his children. Watts admitted to having an affair with a co-worker after initially denying it. Shortly after telling his wife he wanted a separation, Watts claims he saw her on a baby monitor actively strangling Celeste. Watts told police he saw his other daughter sprawled out on her bed and blew, and then he went into a rage and ultimately strangled Shanann to death. Watts didn't explain to police why he loaded the bodies into his truck and buried his wife Shanann in a shallow grave and daughters in oil tanks.
He's going to be in court tomorrow.
Kelly Trippi was friends with Shanann and says she doesn't believe Watts' story.
He should have said, "I did it." He should have said, I'm completely a monster.
Watts will be back in court in November, where he will enter a plea. But we still don't know if the district attorney will pursue the death penalty in this case. Omar Villafranca, CBS News, Greeley, Colorado.
The man accused of being the Golden State Killer faced new murder and rape charges Thursday as California prosecutors consolidated cases against him there.
The so-called Golden State Killer stood without showing any emotion as he heard the charges against him. 13 counts of murder, 13 additional counts of kidnapping to commit robbery. Inside the courtroom were survivors and relatives of victims. Investigators believe 72-year-old Joseph James DeAngelo is also responsible for nearly 50 rapes in the 1970s and 80s, but the statute of limitations have long run out for those crimes. No plea was entered. It's unclear when the trial will begin. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Wildfires on the West Coast are smoking out millions of people there.
A visit to Seattle's iconic Space Needle normally provides breathtaking panoramic views, but the skyline now shows a city choked with smoke and ash.
I expected it to be clear and we could see everything. I didn't expect to smell smoke.
It's collateral damage from a horrific start to the fire season, with wildfires burning from California to Canada. This NASA satellite image shows smoke covering nearly 2 million acres burning in the U.S.
This is the worst air quality we've had across the region since 2000.
And right now, it's some of the worst air on Earth. So bad that just spending the day outside is equivalent to smoking nearly 8.5 cigarettes. And all that smoke is bad for the lungs, especially for the elderly and young children. That's leading to more people wearing masks outdoors, potentially a new normal in years to come.
As we have hotter and drier summers in our forests, we are increasing the chances of these kinds of summers happening more and more often.
Carter Evans, CBS News, Seattle.
A woman walking her dog was killed by an alligator at a popular South Carolina vacation spot, Hilton Head Island.
Investigators say 45-year-old Cassandra Klein was taking her dog for a routine morning walk when the alligator attacked.
When they got to this lagoon, authorities say a 9-foot alligator came out and lunged for the dog. Klein tried to protect her pet, and that's when the alligator attacked her instead.
It appears that the alligator grabbed the leash instead of the dog, and it was some sort of a basic tug of war with her trying to get the dog back via the leash, and in turn, the alligator drug her and the dog into the water.
Klein's body was recovered in the lagoon. The dog was not harmed. People inside this gated resort community were stunned by the attack.
This is just going to be heartbreaking for everybody.
Klein was an elementary school teacher in upstate New York. She and her husband did not have any children and reportedly split their time between New York and South Carolina. In a statement, Klein's sister called her a special and beautiful person, adding, "We are all heartbroken and not sure how to get through this." Nationwide, deadly alligator attacks are statistically rare. But about 2 months ago in South Florida, a 47-year-old woman was killed while walking her dog in a nature preserve. Her remains were found inside a 12-foot alligator. And in the summer of 2016, 2-year-old Lane Graves was killed when he was attacked by an alligator near a lake on a Disney resort property near Orlando.
Neighbors say this resort has had to remove alligators in the past. Wildlife officials were able to locate the alligator that attacked Klein and have it euthanized. Mark Strassman, CBS News, Hilton Head Island, South Carolina.
West Nile virus has killed 2 people in Louisiana this year and sick in dozens more. WWL Radio's Dave Cohen has the details on the brain-swelling disease spread by mosquitoes.
There have been 53 reported cases of West Nile virus in Louisiana, leading all other states. And particularly concerning is that 31 of those are the neuroinvasive, more serious form of the disease.
That's the variety that can kill about 10% of the people that have it.
State epidemiologist Dr. Raul Retard says those who survive may never fully recover.
Another 1 out of 10 will have a permanent disability.
Everyone's advised to protect against mosquito bites. Dave Cohen for CBS News, New Orleans.
Scary moments aboard a private jet carrying rapper Post Malone Tuesday before it made an emergency landing. Here's correspondent Kenneth Craig.
A private plane carrying rapper Post Malone landed safely at Stewart International Airport in upstate New York. Shortly after takeoff from Teterboro Airport, the pilot radioed in a distress call.
Sir, we just thought the tire blew, so we might need to come back, sir.
The pilot calmly informed air traffic control that the Gulfstream jet blew 2 tires.
Yeah, we're not going to declare an emergency, sir, but we'd like to just head back.
The plane was redirected to Stewart International Airport instead of returning to Teterboro. For hours, the pilot stayed in the air, burning off fuel to decrease the weight of the plane. On the ground for the landing, emergency crews were standing by just in case something went wrong. Officials say Malone and his entourage were headed to London Luton Airport in England. Kenneth Craig, CBS News, New York.
The rapper tweeted after landing, saying he can't believe how many people wished death upon him on Twitter. Australia has a new prime minister. Here's CBS News reporter Scott Maiman.
Scott Morrison becomes Australia's 7th prime minister in 11 years. It follows a week of turmoil within the ruling coalition government, with Malcolm Turnbull resigning as prime minister after he accepted a leadership challenge from within his own party as a vote of no confidence in him personally. But he's also announced he's resigned from politics. That means the coalition will no longer have enough seats in parliament to form a majority government. It'll need to either form an alliance with independents or call a snap general election. Scott Maiman for CBS News, Brisbane, Australia.
Coming up, the future of food in combat.
The goal of these new rations is to be lower in weight and volume.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant at our nation's capital with newsmakers like Republican Congressman Trey Gowdy. Do you think it would be wise for the president to sit down for an interview with Robert Mueller?
I do.
Democratic National Committee Chair Tom Perez.
This president has absolutely no moral compass.
Trump cabinet member Linda McMahon.
First time that I met Donald Trump was at a Rolling Stones concert.
Politics, policy, and a side of pop culture. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Turkish authorities have detained 2 people following an attack Monday on the U.S. Embassy in Ankara. No one was hurt, but CBS's Holly Williams in Istanbul reports it's the latest in a string of attacks against the U.S. there.
The authorities in Ankara say six rounds were fired at the U.S. embassy. In 2013, the embassy was targeted by a suicide bomber who killed a security guard. And in 2015, attackers opened fire outside the U.S. consulate here in Istanbul. But this attack comes as relations between the U.S. and Turkey, two NATO allies, are strained. They're at odds over several issues, including Andrew Brunson, an evangelical pastor from North Carolina who Turkey accuses of espionage and terrorism, and who's been in detention here in Turkey for nearly 2 years. In response, the U.S. has imposed sanctions this month, and both sides have announced tariffs on some goods. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has called this an economic war. But we do not know if or how this shooting is connected with those tensions. Holly Williams, CBS News, Istanbul.
The Pentagon's preparing to roll out new meals for troops around the world, at least the kind that lasts 3 years. They're called close combat assault rations, and they're designed for Army Rangers and Special Ops soldiers who often need to carry days' worth of meals or other supplies. Julie Smith is a food technologist with the DOD. Julie, these are similar to MREs, or meals ready to eat, but how are they different?
So the goal of these new rations is to be lower in weight and volume than the existing MRE, and to support semi-independent units for up to 7 days to maintain readiness, sustainability, and lethality.
How are they packed, or how are they formulated different than regular MREs?
Yeah, well, vacuum packaging helps reduce the volume of the components that are packed within the meal, as well as vacuum packaging the entire meal helps with volume reduction as well.
And tell me about MRE pizza. This is something that soldiers have wanted for a long time. That's finally about to be rolled out.
Yeah, so the pizza started being assembled earlier this spring. It's being packed into MRE meal bags now, and hopefully the warfighters will start to see it soon.
Why is that such a hard thing to just put into MREs? What's the challenge there?
The challenge is it has to be shelf stable for 3 years at 80 degrees Fahrenheit. In 6 months at 100 degrees Fahrenheit.
Defense Department food technologist Julie Smith on the Weekend Roundup. Millions of Americans planning to travel Labor Day weekend. Now one senator is warning folks considering buying travel insurance they might not get the protection they think they paid for.
I could just feel my blood boiling.
Laura Trapiano spent nearly $1,100 on flights to Europe for her and her husband Matt, a Marine veteran who did tours in Iraq and Afghanistan to celebrate their second anniversary. With the trip 10 months away, she bought travel insurance through the airline.
So about a month after we booked the trip, I find out that I'm pregnant with my daughter. And she's due October 21st. And our flight to come back from Europe was October 19th. So naturally, you can't fly when you're that pregnant.
While the insurance covered illness, it did not cover pregnancy. Her claim was denied.
The only thing skimpier than airplane legroom is the coverage of these insurance policies.
A review by Senator Ed Markey's office found nearly all major U.S. airlines and online booking sites sell travel insurance, typically requiring customers to click yes or no to purchasing before being allowed to book a trip. The report found what it calls questionable travel insurance marketing practices for policies that offer minimal coverage and often erect hurdles to the payment of claims.
Consumers are being tipped upside down, money is shaken out of their pockets, and it's split between the airlines and the insurance companies, and it's just plain wrong.
Just two companies underwrite all those policies. In a statement, the U.S. Travel Insurance Association said the industry was not contacted by Senator Markey, adding, "Travel insurance is a valuable product that protects consumers' financial investment. The group recommends that travelers fully understand the coverage options they are purchasing to make sure it fits their needs. The purchase of travel insurance is voluntary."
The solution ultimately is a more informed consumer, by which I mean people actually reading the fine print.
For Laura and Matt, the airline refunded the taxes on their canceled trip, but they were out more than $700.
We reached out to Norwegian, the airline that Laura was flying. The airline says it believes its trip protection and cancellation policies were properly followed. However, it's going to offer a goodwill refund of the remainder of Laura's airfare. Chris Van Cleve, CBS News, Washington.
Now to a very special Sweet 16 birthday celebration.
Dakota Cad, or Bubba, often sits in his backyard along Wisconsin State Highway 26, hoping truckers will blow their horns for him. Those truckers went the extra mile to give him a birthday surprise. Bubba has cerebral palsy and Dandy Walker syndrome. Peg Cad is Bubba's mom.
I can't even imagine what it's going to be like when we pull into the park.
Dakota, look at
it.
Do you think they came for your birthday?
Me?
Yeah, for you.
Are you ready? Okay, come on down.
Oh, look at
happy birthday.
The story of how hundreds of trucks and more than 1,000 people came together to celebrate Bubba's birthday started with one small act of kindness.
Dakota was out in his normal spot, sitting there pumping his arm, and I noticed there was a bag on the ground, and it was a little semi-truck, and I realized that somebody had taken the time to stop on the highway and throw this package for my son over the 5-foot fence.
Bubba's mom posted about finding the present on Facebook, writing, "Please, if you know C.H. Hull Trucking, telling them whoever did this is awesome." It went viral and finally led to truck driver Mark King. He and other truck drivers who'd passed Bubba waving at them wanted to do something special, so they planned this party.
I've always had a soft spot for children in wheelchairs, probably because I grew up with a sister in our home that she was handicapped.
Did you have fun today, Bubba?
Yeah.
What child ever gets something so special like this? To see people embrace my son, giving him hugs and wishing him a happy birthday, and it's amazing that there are folks like that out there.
CBS's Jeff Glore reporting. Finally this weekend, goodbye to a sitcom staple.
CBS says the next season of the number one show on television, The Big Bang Theory, will be its last. The series began as geeky scientist roommates played by Jim Parsons and Johnny Galecki, and then expanded to include their friends, girlfriends, and wives. Parsons has won 4 Emmy Awards for his role.
Bazinga.
Other stars include Mayim Bialik and Kaley Cuoco. Cuoco is TV's highest paid actress.
Bazinga.
Season 12, its last, premieres next month. Matt Piper, CBS News.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.